The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
If you're listening to The Curve, we have a very special guest with us in the studio. Dr. Janil Puthucheary is Senior Minister of State for the Ministry of Transport and the Ministry of Communications and Information. We spoke earlier about Singapore's journey to become a smart nation, but we're shifting gears to Dr. Janil's other portfolio, transport. Let's start with an issue that's close to many Singaporeans' hearts, and that is rail reliability. How is the government leveraging technology to address rail reliability?
Well, we've made great strides on rail reliability. And you have to realize that this year our mean kilometers between failure, which is the standard marker of rail reliability, has improved three times. It's now 661,000 kilometers, and that's a three times improvement that we've seen this year. So the first thing I want to point out is that our efforts are paying off, and I think commuters and consumers are starting to notice. Technology forms part of it. I mean, certainly, rail is a technological endeavor. You get to go on rail because of the technology that's there, but it's not all there is to it. I mean, we've done quite a lot. We've replaced the sleepers. We've replaced the third rail, the communications, the train-based communications, and we've got a whole bunch of other stuff: power supply, some of the trains itself, the trackside circuits. All that's coming up. Those are the technologies that we are going to refresh. Mm-hmm. So replacing and improving the technologies that we do have is a key component of improving rail reliability, and that's what we've been doing, and we have to keep doing it. But there are two other things that we have to think about. One is how we can we use technology in a different way. So things like predictive maintenance. So using data analytics and sensors that we want to embed, and we have embedded throughout our rail network, to then not just do things on a routine basis or post-failure, but go and do maintenance before it becomes absolutely necessary, predictive maintenance, and target our efforts in that way. The second component is really thinking of doing things in a different way. So different tools, just talked about, and then doing things in a different way. So one example is what we've done with early closure, late opening. We've just had to basically say there's a trade-off, and if we can close the MRT system earlier or open up later on a weekend morning, it gives the engineers a lot more time to do stuff overnight. And that's not just substituting 2 hours here for 6 hours there. It's actually, you can do different things when you have a big chunk of time. You can lift out whole parts of the rail, you can replace very complex systems. So there's three fronts that we're talking about to answer your question. First, replacing and updating and refreshing the technology we have. Second, using technology to do different engineering solutions to the kinds of problems we have. And the third is not really technology, but thinking of how we can do things differently to use what we have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dr. Janil, how close are we to achieving the government's vision of a car-light society? I mean, what are some of the challenges that you think we need to overcome?
Well, firstly, I'm going to say it's not just the government's vision. I noticed you were doing the traffic updates just now, and mm-hmm. I want to point out that you're only reaching out to one-third of Singaporeans, mm-hmm. because at peak hour now, two-thirds of Singaporeans are commuting using public transport. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the government that's thinking of a car-light society. Mm-hmm. Commuters at peak hour
right.
are going for a car light way of getting home. And so today, two-thirds at peak hour, 39% of households don't own a car, so 60% of Singaporeans cope without their owning a car. Mm. Doesn't mean they don't use a car, because they might use a taxi, they might use a point-to-point service, but they don't necessarily need to own a car. So in that way, it's not the government's vision of a car-light Singapore. I think Singaporeans are moving towards a car-light vision. And this is one of the things that we found in our land transport master plan engagements, our focus group discussions, our e-poll, and our public consultation document responses, is that more than two-thirds of Singaporeans are asking for, supporting, and pushing for what we would call a walk, cycle, ride vision. Mm-hmm. We're not quite using car light. We're calling it walk, cycle, ride. Why are we doing that? Well, the walking's obvious, the cycling's obvious. But when we say ride, what we mean is riding an MRT, riding a bus, and riding a car that you don't own. Mm-hmm. So point-to-point, don't want to advertise any particular operator, but you know who they are. And taxis, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So actually, it's everything but owning a car. So it's not quite car light versus non-car light.
Right.
It's car-owned versus not owning your own car. And two-thirds of Singaporeans perhaps more support this vision. So we're making progress. We're making progress. And this business of more people using public transport at peak hour and less households owning a car has continued to improve year on year, even though the demand for transport is growing at 5%. Mm-hmm. So it's not a static need for transport, it's an increasing demand for transport and a reduction in the need for owning a car. So we're moving in that direction.
Shifting gears to Singapore's Smart Nation Drive and Smart Urban Mobility for the people who are the two-thirds of Singaporeans in buses right now, share with us a little of the vision for autonomous vehicles in Singapore and how that could possibly transform our urban landscape.
Well, we think autonomous vehicles are a key component of the kind of transport landscape we want over the next 20 years. When exactly it will happen? Well, we have a roadmap. We don't have quite a destination. When it comes to autonomous cars, we're assuming that this, from an engineering point of view, is going to be solved somewhere else. And there are a lot of people pushing on this. We have to then be ready from a legal point of view, a regulatory point of view. But we're focusing our effort on autonomous buses. Mm. We want to have autonomous vehicles as a solution for public transport. So this is not theoretical, it's not science fiction, it's already happening. So today we've got 70 kilometers of roads, one north and Sentosa, where autonomous vehicles are being tested on a real road. I mean, this is not a test track. We have a test track, there's a CTRAN facility with NTU, where we can do the basic engineering and the safety. Then we have these 70 kilometers of roads. We've committed to having them in towns, town-wide deployment in Punggol, Tengah, and the Jurong Innovation District by 2023. So that means that these autonomous buses then will be operating real routes. You'll have to use your EasyLink card, or maybe not even your EasyLink card, whatever is the technology of the time in 2023, to use these autonomous buses for public transport. And we've committed to having nationwide routes supported by autonomous buses by 2030. So we have a roadmap. It's already started and we're working on it. And if we can get this right, it has a few advantages for Singapore. Mm-hmm. Firstly, there's the engineering associated with autonomous buses. Somebody's got to manufacture the components, work out how to design the software. It's going to create jobs. Mm-hmm. Secondly, there's also a whole series of jobs of how you operate a fleet of autonomous buses. How do you maintain them? How do you integrate them with other parts of the public transport network? And no one's paying anywhere near as much attention as we are, and we think this is an opportunity for us to have a competitive advantage.
Okay, talking about buses, for buses, general buses right now, what are some of the upcoming developments that commuters can look forward to? Maybe you want to share with us?
Well, there are three major aspects in the short term that we're trying to think about how we can use technology and technology-associated ideas in order to improve the bus commute. We've got some diesel hybrid buses already rolling out, and we've got some electric buses also. You know, we have plans, the tenders have been called and these things are being developed. So over the next few months and years, you will see, I think it's 50 or 60 diesel hybrid buses and about 50 electric buses that will then become part of the fleet. Now, you may or may not notice them from the outside. They should, you know, I presume have the same colors and liveries with whoever's operating them. But when you're inside, you should certainly notice them in terms of being quieter, using the best types of technology in terms of the ride that you have. We're hoping that they can have information displays that keep the commuters a bit more informed. Some of our latest buses, they have little USB charging ports. So, you know, we're trying to change the bus experience from what you experience when you sit down, what the fleet operator has benefits from in terms of maintenance and energy, an electric bus, for example, and also how it helps the environment. Pollution will be reduced. So those are two important things. From a policy side, one thing that we're trying is what we call on-demand shuttle buses. So rather than having a fixed route, you maybe have an app or something where you aggregate demand. And having on-demand shuttle buses may well change how we use buses. And we think there's something that's worthwhile. We're experimenting, and we're going to see how far we can go with this.
So the electric buses we know will significantly help reduce air pollution. The cost, though, of maintenance, could that prove higher than that of diesel buses?
Well, in the short term, likely it will. Like any new technology, as you're starting to get going, you understand where the efficiencies are, where the operational issues are. Maybe that there's a cost issue. But over the long term, it's likely that these will reduce just in terms of volume and scale as more and more come along. But with electric buses and electric motors in general, because you're not handling a biological substance, a combustible substance, fuel, and the interface between it, maintenance costs could potentially come down, especially if we standardize quite a lot of the components and quite a lot of the battery interfaces and so on and so forth. That is certainly the intent. And for people working on electric vehicles around the world, a reduction in total life cycle cost is a key advantage that they can see. And that's why they're investing so much time, effort and money into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how will e-payments feature this push for a smart mobility, urban mobility?
You're not going to have smart urban mobility without e-payments. It's a non-starter. E-payments is, like several other things, kind of the rails on which the smart nation needs to run. Mm. This is a key enabler in order to have smart urban mobility. And what do I mean by smart urban mobility, by the way? It's worth talking about that. Mobility as a service. So you as a commuter then have a choice of integrating different modes of commute. So you could perhaps take a shared bike to the MRT station, and then at the other end of your ride, you could integrate with a bus seamlessly or with a point-to-point car or maybe another scooter or something. And you have, from door to door, maybe two or three different solutions. That's actually what you're doing today already. But you're engaging with different providers, you're using different tickets, and if you are using an app, you're using different apps. Mm. So the thing to do then is to bring all that in one platform where you say, this is where I want to get to, and in one platform, I want to be able to see what my options are. And ideally, in one platform, I need to be able to then pay because I have to compare prices in order to make my choice. None of this is going to happen unless e-payments is around. Mm-hmm. And you need all these different transport operators to integrate with e-payment solutions. So e-payments is a key enabler of smart urban mobility and mobility as a service. And that's one of the reasons why we have to push so hard at getting e-payments right. And what we do in transport, what e-payments allows for transport, you can imagine will then make possible all kinds of opportunities in so many other industries.
Dr. Janil, you're aware of multiple hats. Before we let you go, we have to find out what has been the most challenging aspects of your job. For the listener, Dr. Janil is Senior Minister of State at two ministries. He's also chairman of OnePeople.sg and the People's Association Youth Movement Panel of Advisors. So a lot on your plate. What has been your biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge, well, I guess in some ways I'm a father to three children. And, you know, when I have to explain what the government is doing and how it might affect their lives growing up, when I explain to my three children, I have no staff around, I have no assistance from my ministry, and my three children give me no quarter and hold me to task. So sometimes explaining government policy to them is my biggest challenge.
Oh, I see. Because we wanted to find out how you manage your time.
No, I look at my phone and it tells me where to go.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for the vision that you painted of Singapore to come. Great pleasure speaking with you. Dr. Janil Puthucheary there, Senior Minister of State for the Ministry of Transport and the Ministry of Communications and Information. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.